So I'm here in the KCBX studio with, I'm going to ask you to go around the table and introduce yourselves. So starting with you on my left.
Yeah, my name's Ryan James. I'm an English teacher at New Tech High School.
Tell me about the high school. What is it?
So it's part of a New Tech network, which means that it has to be relatively small. So it can't be more than 500 kids. And it's tech-based, but it's also project-based, which means we take all of our state standards and try to find a real-world connection. So not just taking a test, but it would be like an event or a presentation or a art project or something like that. And so we try to make everything more relevant for 21st century learners, workers.
I see. Is it a charter school? Do you have to apply to get in?
It is not a charter school. It's part of Lucia Mar Unified School District. So it's open enrollment to anybody who wants to go. We can't take more than 125 per class, but we haven't had to get to that point quite yet. So we're at about 100 for each class right now.
Okay, great. All right, so I'll move on to introductions.
Okay, my name is Harrison Winnikoff, and I'm a junior at Central Coast New Tech High School.
Okay, great. And you?
I'm Gianna McArdle, and I'm also a junior at New Tech High School.
You do a special kind of politics class. Tell me all about it.
Okay. So at New Tech, we combine English with our government and econ class for our juniors. And we were kind of tasked with how do we make a real-world connection with the content, which can kind of be dry sometimes about government. And we decided to create a project where the kids would create their own political party. And we made a point to not tell them about what a Democrat was or a Republican was, to just start from scratch. What's the government for? Why does it exist? Why do we need it? Do we need it at all? And what should its policy stances be? So they've, for the last 6 weeks, they've created these parties with the ultimate goal of our event night, which is this fifth annual, I think this year, salon night. And a salon was from the Enlightenment period where people would get together in these someone's house and talk about government, talk about policies. And so we have rented out some space, South County Regional Center down in AG, and we're going to have all the parties. We have 22 parties that are all different, and they're going to try to get people to vote for them based upon their policies on various issues.
Okay. Is this open to the public?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Just getting the word out. Usually we count all the parents to come of the kids, and then we get some elected officials will come each year. We've had the mayors come a couple times last couple years and some board members. But it's just a fun night of talking about politics, and everyone's always usually afraid to talk about politics. And so we try to purposefully discuss politics and what's best for our government without assuming that everyone's red or blue, part of a party or not.
Harrison, how did you get involved with this? I guess, did you have to because it was your class?
Yeah, so we definitely had to. That was one part of it. But I am also, so I actually am thinking that I might want to go into politics. And so political studies was a class that I've been excited for since I was a freshman. And so for me, being able to create a political party was just a really cool thing to be able to do.
Okay, great. And what kind of political party did you create?
So I guess to give you a little bit of background on it, so some of the main things that differentiate every group is we had to choose between safety versus freedom. So what rights the citizen should have to go and keep them safe versus how many rights they're basically given. So the freedom of press, the freedom of speech, that kind of thing. There's also things like isolationism versus interventionism, which means do you go and interfere in other countries' affairs, whether that's with trading, fighting, things like that. There are, let's see, what else is there? Taxes, what the government should be spending money on, what the state should be spending money on, and then kind of whether the control should be more with the individual states or whether it should be more government overall federal control.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, great. And Gianna, how did you get involved?
I mean, same as Harrison, we had to because it was our class. But I was also really excited for it because, I mean, I don't really know exactly where I stand politically. Like, I know where my parents are and I know where people I disagree are, but I don't know where on the kind of spectrum I stand. So I was looking forward to the project because I was able to kind of narrow in on what my beliefs are by exploring things without the like red and blue kind of black and white two choices thing.
Right. Already, I imagine that you're spending a lot more time thinking about this than most people do once they become adults. So where did this idea come from?
Again, at New Tech, we sit down with the standards and we try to think about, so the kids have to learn this through the state of California, but how can we make it meaningful, like a lifelong, where they look back in 15 years and be like, I remember that. And usually we don't remember anything from high school, in my experience. My co-teacher and I, it's a co-taught class, so two teachers in the class at one time, she and I thought to ourselves, we see a lot of frustration in public with people being very polarized. And a lot of research has shown that our country is the most polarized it's been in a generation or more. And so we thought, let's get the kids to actually kind of create without knowing what the polls are. And in doing so, they met a lot of the standards, and they could be tested for those standards. But while they're creating something very organic and they're choosing it, and typically when students can choose what they want to do and how they want to do it, they're going to try a lot harder and they're going to show up for class more often and give you a lot more effort. So we just thought, let's just let them start from scratch and pretend like the Constitution exists, and then that's it. So what is your government going to look like in light of what the Constitution says? It's only 35 pages long, so it's not even a huge document, which is kind of fun to read.
Right. Okay. And so what have you been most surprised about over the last six-week process? When you're standing in class, does something really like jump out to you, like wow, I didn't know that that was going to happen? Or,
you know, each year, what I love is that you'll get a student who is what you think would be conservative, really conservative. They are big into the Second Amendment. They're big into an issue like abortion, and you know that going in. But then they're like, we need to fund public education and a national welfare system at the same time. And so you get this, something that wouldn't exist, it can't exist, it seems like in our capital, happening in the classroom. The kid doesn't know what he's supposed to do or isn't supposed to do, but they just think about, this is one policy, this is a second policy, and I don't have to line up according to anything to think opposite things, because in my world, this works, and I can be like government-funded welfare, and I can also be pretty conservative with my gun rights.
Okay, got it. And Harrison, you said you wanted to go into politics.
I did, yes.
What are you envisioning?
So that's a good question. So right now I'm thinking I'm kind of between international business and politics, actually. So they're very different, but I'm much more interested in global trade and that kind of route. So maybe more like Secretary of State if I ever did anything. So that kind of State Department would be really cool.
Got it. Okay. And so in studying this, what's your favorite part of the Constitution? What's your favorite article?
You know, I can't say I necessarily have a favorite article. There's definitely some that are much more notorious and well-known than other ones. I know, like, right now in conversation, some like the 14th Amendment, which are talking about birthright citizenship with the current president, is a big one that we talked about. But there's also some which are more just like, what rights does the president have? What rights do the Senate and Congress have? And for me, just kind of learning what regulations and what they can and can't do, and then comparing it to what they attempt to go and do, I guess, is a really entertaining thing to go and really figure out how the whole structure of government works. And so that's been really cool for me.
Okay. And how about you, Gianna?
Pretty similar to Harrison. I liked reading about how exactly the checks and balances work, because I knew about that as a concept, but I didn't know like which regulations were in place. So just seeing like what powers different branches have, because I mean, everyone kind of has the idea that like the president has a lot of power, but like reading the Constitution, it shows like how that power is limited. And that was interesting to learn, because it's something I definitely didn't know before.
Right. I know when you're young, it just seems like this is the way everything is, and it's always been this way, and it's not going to change. And yet, it does change. So where do you go from here? You'll have the salon on coming up this week.
Yep.
You talked about civility mm-hmm. in politics. Where does civility enter into this mm-hmm. classroom exercise?
Yeah, good question. So also kind of a national trend in my adult years has been pretty antagonistic speeches towards each other locally and federally. So we wanted to teach the kids, how do you talk about politics and be honest and authentic, but not get emotionally heated to the point where you'd say like you hate something or hate someone. And so a lot of the days, each day we were starting the class with some sort of a discussion, some sort of a debate on a topic. And so kind of learn, we teach the kids how to listen, how to maintain eye contact as a listener, and then for salon night, just teaching them how to let someone say what they want and then ask good questions. I think good questions is kind of the key to salon night. If you don't agree with someone, is getting them to talk about why they think what they do, as opposed to waiting for them to be done and then just spewing out what you have to say, and then everyone's just looking at each other like, all right, see you later. So make it a conversation and with a real person is kind of the goal.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And to that point, Harrison, it's really hard. I find it very difficult to not get heated when I, because I seem to feel right. so strongly about things. But what's been your experience with that?
So New Tech is definitely a place where everybody definitely has their own opinions. And because of the fact that it's really where people can go and be themselves, you get a lot of different opinions and people that aren't afraid to voice those opinions. We've actually have been pretty good so far about being able to just respectfully go and hear each other's thoughts. And every day we go and do something called a rote book, which basically means that we might have a prompt. So what's your opinion on the specific topic? And then we have to go and discuss it with somebody else. So we've already kind of gotten our thoughts down on paper. And then you go and what the teachers usually try to go and have you do is actually talk with somebody with a conflicting view. And so we really try to learn every single day how to talk with somebody that doesn't believe what you believe, how to handle it respectfully, and then how to really get your point across from both sides of the table. And that's something I think once you leave school, I've not seen it anywhere else. So it's definitely a really interesting experience.
Yeah, I agree. And Gianna, is there something that have you had an opinion that you've been surprised that you've come out the other side with a different opinion about something?
Yeah, for sure. I think I always go into discussions with kind of a strong opinion. Like, I know exactly what I think, and I'm like, I go into it thinking I'm going to argue this, and I'm not going to basically not going to listen to the other side. But like, as we've been learning how to talk to other people about it, I find myself listening a lot more to what people are saying instead of just thinking about what I'm going to say next. So it makes me think about, I already know what their opinion is, but it makes me think about why they think that. And I kind of understand their side more if I understand their thought process that leads them to their opinion. So I end up kind of maybe not switching all the way, but changing my own opinion and not being as like hardcore for one side. So that's been a great learning experience from doing the discussions in class for sure.
Wow, interesting. I mean, what are the methods that you use to teach this?
Well, in the class, we can kind of universally teach some skills because everyone's there for the same reason. But salon night's more tricky because the parents show up and they don't know the rules and they don't know that we're focusing on civility and how to do that. So teaching the kids that sometimes you just kind of say, yeah, that's a really complicated issue. Thanks so much for talking about it. And you kind of cut your losses. And if you can recognize that someone's emotionally gone to a place where they can't listen anymore, you really just got to wait on that one and not think that I'm going to crack the code with that person. But like Gianna said, if you can ask questions and ask them why they think that, what evidence do they have for that, what part of the Constitution are they basing their response on, you find out very quickly that people don't have usually very good reasons for what they think besides a talking point they heard on the TV. And so do they line up with the Founding Fathers? Do they line up with the Constitution? Line up with what's worked in the past and other countries have tried? Oftentimes, it's just those questions that get down to the bottom of, why do you really think that? And if someone hopefully will realize, like, oh, why do I think that? Why couldn't I answer that question? Why did I get so mad at that high schooler when they asked me about my thoughts about government? And hopefully just we can use our age, I guess, as kind of a cover to teach the public that you need to know why you think things. And you shouldn't be afraid if someone asks you why you think something. That shouldn't be a threat to your day emotionally.
I would be very hard-pressed to explain many of the things why I think them. I think that's really difficult.
Yeah, it's definitely not easy. It's not an easy thing we're asking the kids to do. It's like you said, like we don't see most adults doing it. They don't have role models in this area. It's not popular to ask why and slow the conversation down. We want sound bites. We want quick things and click, click, click on online. And so to stop and say, well, what's your source on that? Or why do you think that? That's not popular. That doesn't trend well right now. But it should. It should be how our country works, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. What about you guys? Do you feel it's important to slow down and really question about why you think something, why you have an opinion, and where that opinion came from?
I think definitely, because a lot of opinions can come from just reading something like an offhand comment or like hearing something without any evidence backing it up. So if you kind of dig in deeper to what's really happening and like what could form that opinion, it maybe doesn't need to change it, but it can inform your opinion a lot more so that you're not just like spouting things you heard from other people. Like you have evidence to back up what you think. Or if you see evidence, then you might realize that, oh, I actually believe the other side because I've been getting misinformation from other people who haven't had any sources or anything.
Okay. All right. That makes a lot of sense. Where do you see yourself? You're a junior. Mm-hmm. Where do you see yourself in a few years?
Not in politics, for sure. I mean, I like this project, but it's not really what I'm interested in so much. I want to go into art in college and hopefully after, but, you know, got to make money doing that. But, yeah. I mean, the part of politics that I'm interested in, I guess, are, like, civil rights and maybe not protesting. I don't know what word I'm looking for. Like, activism, like civil rights activism. So if I was to go into something to do with politics, that's kind of the field I would go into.
Okay. And so let's talk about civil rights, because are civil rights based in the Constitution?
First Amendment kind of spells out most of your civil rights. So you have speech, religion, petition, freedom of assembly, and press. So those things, you can tell the founding fathers wanted the public to be powerful. They wanted the government to be a little bit afraid of the public, I think. You can just kind of infer from those first 10 amendments. They're all about protecting people and not letting the government get overly large, I guess, in our lives. So I think that's kind of where most of our Supreme Court cases are right now, is in those first couple amendments. It's about searches. It's about, you know, where you're born and if you're a citizen. It's about where does my freedom of speech end and someone else's freedom from discrimination kind of begin. And those are really, really tricky areas, but they should be tricky, and that's the whole point. I think the Salon Night's always a loud night. It's like everyone's talking over each other, and there's like 50 different conversations happening at once. But I imagine the Constitutional Convention was exactly the same. It was this group, all men at the time, but in a big room trying to figure out what the government would look like. And I'm sure it was very messy. And I think that it should sometimes be a kind of cathartic, just get everything out, listen to each other, and just work through the mess together to kind of solidify what you think should be happening.
Okay. I want to go back and read the whole Constitution.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you got to do it over and over again.
Yeah.
Because I completely forgot. I don't really know it. I mean,
it's crazy.
Yeah.
Every year I read it, I mean, it sounds really nerdy to say this, but I like it more and more because it's so simple. And it, like, the California Constitution is thousands of pages long, and yet in just, you know, tens of pages, it can spell out, here's the basic idea about how this is all going to work. And you can see all the different branches, and you can see how old you have to be a president or a congressman or woman. So it's always like this refreshing thing to read every single year and come back to with kids. John Adams had a quote about his, you know, huge fear that our country would turn into this two-party system, both jockeying for position and power. And a lot of the founding fathers had a distaste for parties. They called them factions back then. But it seems like even back then they started with parties right away. And so we have this natural tendency to want to get into groups together, which I don't think is bad, but other countries have lots of parties and they have to work together and compromise together to get a majority. And it's, again, it's messy, but I think that just brings more people together to kind of find like the C plus B minus average of an answer, as opposed to like it's all or nothing with one party or the other. And it gets very binary in kind of a limiting way.
How does a constitution evolve and change?
Yeah, you can kind of see our histories, like our country's history of making mistakes with slavery, making mistakes with limiting voting rights, and these course corrections that have happened. Obviously, the early 20th century with women, and then the mid in the 50s and 60s with African-American and minorities. So it's a good history lesson of that the Constitution was made to kind of self-correct, and that they created the Supreme Court to kind of help us have a more of a guiding principle where no one's running for re-election of the Supreme Court. They can just sit back and take a different perspective on how they're ruling, which is also very intriguing, kind of that world of the judicial branch. But yeah, I'm always intrigued too by, like, a president's assassinated. Well, what are you supposed to do if someone's assassinated? So you have these amendments, like, well, here's the line of succession. As different people would step in when someone is tragically killed like that. So it all tells a big story, I guess, the document. Only like 27 amendments, I think, which is kind of crazy for how long the document's been there. But
right.
Yeah.
Are there, in taking this class, are there any other countries that you've liked the way that they do things or didn't like the way that they do things?
As part of my political party, my group researched how New Zealand approaches their budget, and they have pretty limited military spending and provide free or very reduced health care for their citizens. And they're one of a couple countries that do that, and I think that's I really like that idea. That's what we included in our party. And then there's other countries that have like free education and stuff like that. And I think it's a good idea to have services like that to provide for people. And I think that's somewhere that our country could definitely improve on.
What are some other of the things that you included in your party that you, because you're taking stances on policy, is that right? And
yes.
You're saying, yes, this is what we want to include in our platform, I guess. Is that the way to talk
about
it?
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
I know for me, so kind of like Gianna, we were looking at a lot of different things, like what do you want to do with education in the military? I think actually a pretty public thing that happened, at least our class, was that a lot of people wanted to cut military spending. Just looking at how much, where the money I guess goes, which is another thing that we really deep dived in, is where actually, like what are they spending it on? And not just military spending, but what in the military? Or not just healthcare, but what part of it? And so you really kind of see how much of it is being used wisely, and then how much of it is much more falling and kind of going to waste. And so that was one big part. But I know for us, we actually, my party at least, really like democracy the way it is in the United States. There's definitely some parts we'd want to pull from one country or another, but overall we like the system. It was just maybe add some more restrictions here, add some more freedoms here, change the taxes here. And so that was kind of the freedom that everybody had, is you can pick and choose what you really think is the best, which is why when Mr. James was going and saying, it's not about like being blue or being red. It's really just, what do you believe? And that's something that if you go out into the real world, you don't get that.
Not at all. And are you in the same political party?
No, we're not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, totally different beliefs, yeah. I'm pretty sure, actually.
Wow. Mm-hmm. All right.
There's a couple similarities. I was surprised by how similar a lot of the groups were. Like Mr. James said earlier, like there's some kids where, like, I know that they would kind of vote conservative, but I don't know what their actual ideals are. And then we ended up having a lot of commonalities between our two parties. So like between me and Harrison's party, they're definitely not the same, but there are certain aspects that are the same, which I was surprised by. I mean, not so much with Harrison, but with some more extreme kids in our class, I guess.
Okay. Can you, like, for what's an example of that?
Well, like Harrison said, a lot of groups wanted to cut military, which I was surprised by, because I feel like there was some people that I thought would want to increase it, and there were teams that did that, but overall, the general trend was that people wanted to decrease military. And that was definitely surprising, because that's something that, you know, typically conservative people want to have a big military and liberal people want to have a small military. So those kids that were traditionally conservative were kind of going the opposite direction.
Right. Okay. Fascinating.
I think the best part is that they don't know they're going the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. They don't know what direction mm-hmm. they're supposed to go. And so they can come at an issue totally fresh, not thinking about what I ought to do or should do traditionally, and they just make it judgment call based upon what they think is the best course of action for any government, what seems fair, what seems logical, what seems like it has good evidence behind it. And then they arrive and they're just, that's the way I am. So in 1780, John Adams wrote, "There is nothing I dread so much as a division of the Republic into two great parties, each arranged under its leader and converting measures in opposition to each other. This, in my humble apprehension, is to be dreaded as the greatest political evil under our Constitution."
Wow. Well, that's what's happened.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. So you can see kind of that was the seed of, you know, what we wanted to do is make 20 parties. And then, like Gianna said, a lot of them are similar. And you can see those natural compromises that would arise if we were running the country in our high school. But that's good. You know, I think there should be compromises, because we have more similarities than differences. And I'm just guessing if all the adults in our country went through this, that we would have a lot more parties. But there's so much money involved. you can't survive as a third party candidate right now, which is sad. But maybe, I don't know, decline to state. I would love to be alive when a decline to state candidate wins presidency. That'd be pretty amazing because you'd have to ask that person every policy question without knowing what they're supposed to say. You couldn't just say, I'm a Democrat, and then know everything about them, or I'm a Republican, I know everything about them. You have to ask them like 20 questions, literally, to know if you should vote for them. And that time, that messiness is what I think we should do.
Thank you so much for coming in and talking about this. I'm getting a little of a clump because it's like, I don't know, I find it really hopeful.
Thanks, Greta.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.